Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
You're very welcome along to the football show. Good to have you with us. Lots to discuss. The football show is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, you can visit gamblingcare.ie. The live football obviously is ongoing. Manchester City already home and hosed with a 2-0 win at Turf Moor. Conclusion to the Ian Wright case, the form of Matt Doherty and in particular Shane Duffy as Irish matches come into view. Aaron Connolly ditching social media, Troy Parrott dropping down another division on loan, Thomas Tuchel making a decent impression, first impression at Chelsea, and more besides. Manchester United winning last night 9-0. To do so, Damien Delaney, hello, it's been a while, how are you?
Sure, things.
Very well, very well. So it's busy, lots going on. Oh, and a Sean Dyche press conference. Have you heard this?
I did, yeah, I saw it, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's coming your way. We'll play some of that. It was different, we can say that much. So, Jesus and Sterling scored the goals for Man City. For Leicester earlier on, Iheanacho and James Justin scored. Everton against Leeds is continuing. That one is going to finish before we're off the air. 64 minutes gone. Everton 2, Leeds 1. Sigurdsson and Calvert-Lewin scored for Everton. And Rafinha scored, pulled one back for Leeds. So, 2-1 Everton, 65 minutes on the clock. And just gone half-time at Anfield, Liverpool 0, Brighton 0, and halftime as well at Villa Park, Aston Villa 0, West Ham United 0. So that is where we are. And Damien, I might just start with the Ian Wright case, and then there is much we have to discuss. Obviously, these are, I always feel these are tricky ones to throw at former footballers. I mean, your brilliance on a football field does not give you a great insight into the workings of the law, and I think we all have to appreciate that. But it does involve Ian Wright, and it maybe highlights the abuse as well that is directed at footballers to some extent or other. So Ian Wright said he is disappointed, if you didn't catch any of this this afternoon, after an 18-year-old Kerry student was spared a criminal conviction for sending racist messages to him last year. Wright said the case for him was not about revenge, but was about, quote, consequences for acts of racism. So the judge decided to apply at the provisions of the Probation Act in this case against Patrick O'Brien, who's from Tralee. So in effect, the charge against O'Brien was absolutely proven and he did plead guilty, but no conviction will be recorded against him. Wright said in a statement earlier on today that he had forgiven O'Brien, but he said, "I wasn't expecting my forgiveness to be an invitation to lighten a sentence. And seeing this judgment, I can only wonder what deterrent there is for anyone who spouts this kind of vile, racist abuse." And he said, "No judge's claims of, quote, naivety or immaturity will ever be acceptable to us. The supposed immaturity and naivety of our attackers is never any comfort. So yeah, I'm disappointed and I'm tired and we all are." O'Brien's solicitor obviously made some points in mitigation ahead of sentencing, or ahead of the decision rather. I made the point his client was extremely cooperative, said that O'Brien, from his own money, his own pocket money saved up, had made a €500 donation to the Irish Network Against Racism. Said he was getting on very well as a student, had great results in his last semester, reminded the court O'Brien had come to Tralee Garda Station voluntarily, said he was horrified and now had a good insight into the effects of his actions. He'd also written a letter of apology to Ian Wright, and he said that the O'Brien family had received lots of negative commentary on social media as a result of which they were serving a sentence of their own. Ian Wright wasn't present today. He did have a statement in court which included, "Patrick, I forgive you. I believe in redemption for everyone." It seemed the messages were sent after a game of FIFA on the PlayStation where Ian Wright was on O'Brien's team and he'd lost the game of FIFA, and sent truly horrific messages. I mean, they were truly horrific. So, I mean, Damien, this is difficult, really. This is just kind of grim and difficult on both sides. This is a young man who made a dreadful mistake, and he made that mistake deliberately and consciously and repeatedly. I think there were 20 messages in all, and they were horrific. And so in that regard, your sympathies lie with Ian Wright, who was minding his own business and got dragged into this horrible situation. And then at the same time, you're conscious this is a 19-year-old now whose name is publicly forever associated with this mistake. It will follow him around. He'll have to apply for jobs down the line. That does seem like a significant situation. The judge said he didn't feel that throwing O'Brien in jail would help. Like when Wright talks about a lack of deterrent and you know, the criminal conviction has been spared, the fact is this will follow O'Brien around, high-profile case, and I mean, you would hope that that is a huge deterrent. You would hope that anyone looking on has seen what's happened in this instance, and nobody wants to be dragged through the courts like this. So on the one hand, we probably have a situation where a young person has made a mistake which will follow him around for the rest of his life. And on the other hand, you have Ian Wright, who understandably just feels upset by the whole thing and not happy with how it's all transpired. There's no winner in this case, I think.
Yeah, I understand Ian Wright's disappointment. I think that, you know, it wasn't necessarily a case of a non-conviction and throwing a kid in jail. I think a conviction and, you know, maybe some sort of a lenient sentence or a severe rap on the wrists, really, may have been warranted, because Ian Wright is now saying that maybe other people are thinking that if they say that, they might get let off as well. So that's kind of the deterrent of an actual conviction. But the points you made there are very, very valid. You know, that kid is forever going to be known as that's the fellow that racially abused Ian Wright, you know, probably for the rest of his days, especially in the locality where he lives and where the court case was. So that in itself is a very, very difficult sentence for him. Only he knows, the Patrick O'Brien knows, whether he's truly sorry or whether he, you know, means all the gestures he made there beforehand, or was he making those types of gestures just to get off? Only he knows that, and the kid will have to live with that. But also the publicity that's been raised by Ian Wright when he went public with these messages, and rightly so as well. I think that has, you know, went worldwide. Everybody around the world saw those messages, what the kid wrote, and I think that definitely helped raise the profile that, you know, people won't get away with sending these messages, be it on private chats or to friends or whatever it may be. People won't get away with it, you know, and Ian Wright did the right thing in outing this kid, and he's learned an extremely valuable lesson. Mm.
To matters far less important, then, you caught a bit of Man City winning at Turf Moor, 2-0, Jesus and Sterling. That is a winning streak of 13 games. The last Premier League side to manage 13 straight wins was Arsenal 19 years ago. This is not an everyday thing that Man City have done. It's really impressive.
Yeah, they look really good. I watched the game from the start today, and I mean, they started the game brilliantly. They were helped with a dreadful goalkeeping mistake, really, when it got palmed onto Jesus's head. But the way they control the game, you know, the way that they're set up, they dominate the ball, they don't give the opposition a sniff or a chance, and even if they do, it's usually a long ball upfield and it's a lucky break or a bounce, and Vidra had a couple of, I wouldn't even call them efforts, but glimpses, I suppose, where he kind of maybe could have got lucky and got something. But I mean, they just control the game from start to finish. Pep was using this really interesting formation, or kind of a hybrid of formations, really, in the first half. Listen, against the likes of Burnley, you know, Cancelo was coming into play as a central midfield player, and when they were in possession, it was a three at the back, and Cancelo was coming into midfield, so you had Gundogan, Rodri, and Cancelo in the middle of the park. So I think that was more, well, I mean, obviously Gundogan was pushing on, but I think that was more like stopping the counter-attack, you know, because when he tucks in, now it does leave the right flank for Manchester City or the left flank for Burnley wide open, and it is susceptible, absolutely. And I think, you know, against the likes of Burnley, when they retain the ball and they have 70-80% possession, they get away with it. But it's an interesting little thing that he does. I just hope he doesn't get too cute, too clever in the Champions League, because if you start trying these things out. Now, I know he does with Kyle Walker to a certain extent, and when Mahrez plays, he does an awful lot more because he asks Mahrez to stay high and wide and stay on the touchline. So kind of having a right back on the same line as Mahrez, you know, either underlapping, well, it's impossible to overlap unless you run off the pitch with how high and wide Mahrez actually stays. But, you know, he'd much rather Cancelo come in and then leave Mahrez high and wide on his own, isolated in a 1v1. It's interesting, and it works. It's very, very good, and it's beautiful, and the intricacies are fantastic. When you see Cancelo coming into the middle of the park and being a number six with Rodri, and then how quickly, when they lose the ball, he sprints at an angle to get back in at right back, and Laporte kind of drops in as a left back. So it's very, very good to watch, but I think when you get to the crux of the Champions League, remember against, was it Lyon, Monaco, you know, you think of the games that Manchester City lost that maybe they should. There was always that question mark with Pep. Is he overcomplicating things? You know, when you overcomplicate or do these little things against the Burnleys of this world or even in the Premier League, you get away with it more often than not. But against the elite opposition, if they know you're doing it, they'll put something in place that can exploit that or see that as a severe weakness. So it's great as a football person to watch it. It's great to watch.
He did it at West Brom a couple of weeks ago and it worked a treat as well. But again, I guess the caveat is it's West Brom.
Absolutely. And listen, he's on a 13-game win run, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be doing it all. It's brilliant what he's doing, and it works in the Premier League, and it's fantastic to see. I'm just looking ahead now to the knockout stage of the Champions League when they are up against some serious opposition. And if he does this once, the Champions League, even though it's over two legs, sometimes you know you can lose it earlier. You can lose in a 20-minute spell in a game with away goals and whatnot. So it'll be interesting moving forward. But as I said, for a football person to watch it, I think it's great to see.
Yeah. Sixth straight clean sheet for Stones and Ruben Dias. 4 goals in 20 matches conceded. It's also very impressive. So the rehabilitation of John Stones, I think, is pretty much nearing completion, isn't it?
It is. But I mean, look, the kid always had this potential to be this type of centre-back. He just couldn't quite find the consistency. There was always moments in his game where everyone thought, oh, he's the next one. He's the next Rio Ferdinand on the production line. And he just never could get the consistency. And I think this is the first spell in his Manchester City career where he has put together, 8, 9, 10 world-class performances, or maybe not world-class, but really assured performances, and he looks world-class. So, for him to be mentioned in the same breath as Rio Ferdinand, he obviously has to do this for a number of seasons. So, you know, it's the very, very beginning baby steps of his rehabilitation. But look, everyone thought he was dead and buried at Manchester City, and he's turned it around, and he deserves an enormous amount of credit for that. But he needs to maintain his consistency now, a la Vincent Kompany, for years to come, and be a cornerstone that Manchester City's success is built upon.
So it's Anfield 4:30 Sunday.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That'll be the one from where you'll see it, you know.
They can really open up a serious gap against Liverpool if they win that game. I mean, that has all the hallmarks now of deciding the feel of the title race. Let's assume Liverpool make the breakthrough against Brighton this evening and the second half is about to start. It's still nil all for anyone tuning in. That would get Liverpool to 42 points after the same number of games played. So a 5-point gap.
Yeah.
Now, suddenly that goes down to potentially 2, or it can go out to 8, which is very, very comfortable. So this one feels big. Nothing surer than we're getting a stinger of a nil-all draw here.
No, listen, it certainly feels like this week just gone has been, you know, in golfing terms, moving day, you know.
Yeah.
It does seem to have, you know, all of a sudden the pieces have landed where they've landed and everybody seems to be kind of settled now. It's been a huge week, huge, huge week. And I think the next 7 days, or Sunday basically, will probably tell an awful lot. I think Manchester City will win on Sunday. I think Liverpool, I'm watching tonight in the first half, they're okay. And that's about it. Brighton have been fantastic in the first half. You know, you have to admire Graham Potter and his resilience and his commitment to the way that Brighton have played. They've had the best chances, Brighton. Liverpool haven't been bad by any stretch of the imagination. They've been okay. They've passed the ball reasonably well. With Shaqiri's in the team, Milner's in the team, Henderson's at centre-back. So they're kind of lacking a little bit of urgency in the middle of the park. Salah has been kind of doing his usual bits and pieces. He could come to life, of course, any minute now. And Firmino's been pretty good, I think. But the young boy, Phillips, is centre-back as well. So I think at the moment, Liverpool are doing okay. But that juggernaut that's coming to town on Sunday, I think will be very, very difficult to stop unless Liverpool can come up with something.
I do want to play some of this Sean Dyche press conference, but on Thiago, he's splitting opinion at the moment. Where are you on Thiago? Slowing it down or everything they need in there?
Not at all. It's too easy to say that, you know. I remember sitting with you last year talking about Liverpool, you know, against the likes of Atletico Madrid. They needed a ball-playing, dominant centre-back, or centre-midfield player, sorry. He's that guy. He doesn't. I've watched him. He doesn't slow it down. He retains possession really, really well. Mm. And the one thing Liverpool did was go back to front very, very quickly and play this high-tempo, high-energy game. I think him in the midfield alongside Fabinho or Jordan Henderson, you know, where the energy and the drive and the desire and the runs forward and the relentless pressure helps. But I mean, you can't help but admire Thiago as a football player. He's unbelievable, you know, his ball control and his retention and everything about him. I think he's an addition to Liverpool. It's just that he's come into a team that has been really, really struggling. And he's probably had the expectation of coming in and kind of getting Liverpool back to the level they were at, and it hasn't happened because Liverpool are in a funny place at the minute as a team. Although they do have a good result at the weekend, so absolutely not. I don't think Jurgen Klopp would be at all worried about that. He would never make a mistake like that.
Okay, good. I was starting to doubt myself. I totally agree with you. I've been really looking out for this Thiago slowing the play down, and it hasn't jumped out at me either. And he can also beat a man. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, the only thing he does do is because he retains the ball so well, he plays an awful lot of. He lends the ball to players an awful lot. He bounces it into pockets and gets it back. So when you talk about when you hear Thiago slows the play down, it's not like he's having 2-3 touches. Is he doing a pirouette on it and takes his thing out of it? He retains possession by lending it, bouncing it into it, getting it back, just moving the opposition around, you know, gaining control. So that's what they mean. But I mean, he does move the ball really, really quick. Mm. He just doesn't spin it around the corner like Jordan Henderson all the time.
He does, by the way, as well, though. I mean, I totally accept what you're saying, that lend the ball and keep things ticking over. He is looking for killer passes as well. He's quite often looking to curl, you know, whip one over a back four into somebody all the time as well.
Yeah, but he won't do it like Jordan Henderson does that, and he puts the ball at risk because Jordan Henderson pay percentages balls, and Jordan Henderson will often play them blind, just spin these balls on the side, and hopefully someone gets onto it. Thiago would consider putting the ball at risk, you know, that he's playing a ball to nobody. He will only play it when it's 100% on. You know, if there's any doubt in his mind, he'll, you know, roll the studs over the top of it and find another option. That's the type of player that he is, you know. And I think he's a good addition to Liverpool.
Yeah. I'll even politely say I think he gives the ball away plenty, trying some more adventurous passes. But slowing it down anyway, we can agree on. So Sean Dyche lost this evening, lost at the weekend as well to Chelsea. But in his pre-match press conference before playing City this evening, if you missed it was yesterday. I mean, this is what we want. Life is too boring. These press conferences are far too serious. And Sean Dyche has just, I think, reached that lovely sweet spot in life where he's of an age that he doesn't really care that much what you think of him. His job is very secure at Burnley. He knows he's a good football manager. And frankly, he's done one press conference too many.
Thank you very much. Has anybody ever told you look just like Mick Hucknall?
It's uncanny you say that. Apparently I look very much like Chris Evans too. I mean, I can't see it, personally speaking, I can't see it, but apparently I do, so it's a fair point that you make. Thank you very much for reminding everyone of that. Clear fact that I obviously do look like Mick Hucknall. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've no idea where these press conferences are going anymore. No idea.
They're brilliant because they're less boring. It's like lockdown's really hard for everyone. It's really boring for everyone. So we're just having a natter and just trying to show a bit of humanity in the world, you know what I mean? We are human. Boring questions, they bat them off. You ask me a silly question, I give a silly answer, and we might as well just not bore everyone to death. So thank you, Bernie, for bringing that light.
We've sunk to looky-likeys now.
Situation.
We've sunk to looky-likeys.
Like, for some reason. No, we're not. We're raising ourselves to looky-likeys. Looky-likeys make the world go. Have you never sat in a pub? Well, although that seems like a distant memory, where your mates have just found looky-likeys in the pub. It's one of the best bits of fun you'll ever have in a night. Trust me, just do it. The next time you're allowed in a pub, sit with some friends. You're probably only allowed three, but anyway, sit with some friends or something and just look for looky-likeys. Brilliant. Brilliant fun. Love looky-likeys. So we're not lowering ourselves, Daz. We're raising the bar. We're adding. Yeah. Looky like on holiday is brilliant. It's a brilliant family game. Looky like is on holiday. You get your kids at it. Once they're of an age, fantastic fun. Because then people nudge each other and they do that thing where they go, oh, Dad, I've got one. Look, over there, left. And they go, bungle. It's like, well, how do you even know bungle? You know what I mean?
But then they become that for the whole holiday, don't they?
Yeah. So as soon as you see them and you, yeah. So then every night you're at a restaurant, you nudge them and go, look, bungle's in again. There's bungle.
Brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah. Do you know, has anyone seen the kids' film, Up? right, you know the little old man with the glasses on? I swear to you, we were playing away at Sunderland and a live human version of the man in Up was there. And I said to the lads, right, but the staff went, oh my God, lads, I've got the best one ever. I was nudging around the table because he was just literally at the bar there, and I was nudging and I was going, the fella out of Up. Oh my God, they were crying. They were crying. It's the best looky likey I've ever had. It literally was the cartoon man out of Up, but in a human form. It was bizarre. The lads went, oh my God, that is actually him. To the point when you like want to get a selfie, you know, when them subliminal ones, when he's at the bar, you just turn and go, dunk. Love that game. See, James, right? If you want to get to the depth of real reporting, go around the Premier League and ask all of the Premier League managers, do you play the looky-likey game? And if they give you a boring answer, we'll drive down and we'll slap them with a wet fish and say, that's for your boring answer about looky-likeys. Because everyone should play looky-likeys.
It's what people want to see. It's what the viewers really want to see, I think.
All day. It'd be much more fun than you asking me about whether we're going to play a 4-4-2. And they go, yeah, he is. Sean Dyche is going to play a 4-4-2.
Last holiday we had Daddy's evil best mate. So there was a guy, evil Uncle Steve, they called him. It was my two boys.
Really? Evil Uncle
Steve. Yeah, brilliant.
Well, that's got a bit dark. Well, we're only looking about looky likeys. All right, we're not going too dark on it. Right, come on, Alex. Let's bring us back to normality. It's flatliners again. It's lockdown period. I'm already like this. Oh, God. Come on, Alex. Let's do your job properly and let's ask me a really inane question and I'll answer.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's your job. It's all right. And my job's to answer. So crack on.
It was good. Did you know, though, there was a split second when the guy asked a question before Sean Dyche answered, I thought, this could go either way here. You know, Sean Dyche could lose his rag here, but after the result, last couple of results he's had, and this could be like a meltdown situation. But as soon as it took off, it was quite funny, to be fair.
I mean, I guess you guys are as bored in press conferences half the time as we are.
No, not really. No,
you would have given decent answers. A lot of lads go in there and they try and just absolutely stonewall their way through the whole thing.
Yeah, I know, but sometimes you have to kind of respect the players that they're kind of damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. If they go in there and give honest answers or you know, say something out there, then, you know, they can get criticised for it, and there's kind of a negativity that they don't need in their world right now. So sometimes you're just better off just giving middle-of-the-road answers and everybody forgets who even gave it, you know. So that's why, I mean, a lot of the time players aren't boring. They just don't want, you know, to see a headline when they have a game coming up on a weekend and any undue pressure and stuff like that. So
no, I hear you. Yeah. There would be, I mean, there's sometimes a happy medium of just saying something vaguely interesting and insightful without, you know, creating a headline. But that's a journalist quibbling. By the way, I've got some good news. Got some good news, everyone. Kevin Kilbane has just taken to Twitter and he says, welcome to the world, Olivia May Kilbane, born today, 8:30, 1:30 p.m. Irish time, 8:30 a.m. over there in Canada, 6 pounds, 11 ounces. Mum a superstar, recovering well with Olivia. What a birthday gift for both of us. Well, hey, Kevin Kilbane, good man.
Brilliant news.
Good on him. I'm taking a short break. We're going to have to motor after the ad break. I've got a few things to talk to you. The former Shane Duffy and Matt Doherty in particular. We've got more from Damien Delaney in just a second. Liverpool 0. Brighton 0, 55 minutes on the clock.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Well, the night gets better for Manchester City. Let's go over to Shane Pinnington at Anfield.
Where it's Liverpool 0, Brighton 1. The visitors in front here, courtesy of Stephen Alzate's strike. It was a white ball from the right-hand side, a left-footed crossing from Ben White. It found Dan Burn on the back post, and his header back across goal fell nicely for Alzate, 6 yards out, and he just steered a volley into the right-hand corner of the net, giving Kelleher no chance whatsoever. It's Liverpool 0, Brighton 1.
There we go, Damien Delaney.
Yeah, unfortunately, the young centre-back, Phillips, I think, has got caught out. Not badly, but I just think that, you know, the level at Liverpool are at, you need a centre-back that can deal with that. I mean, it was a deep, deep cross over Alexander's head to Byrne, who headed it back across goal, and he just didn't pick up the flight of it, didn't move his feet quick enough, and then kind of threw out a lazy leg, and it was just a little bit hungrier for him. But I'll tell you, when you're 5 yards out, you need to go and attack the ball, go and meet the ball. Even though it did get headed back across, he should have been able to pick up the floater out a bit quicker, I think. So once again, I think Liverpool's soft spot and centre-back has caught him out. And I tell you what, Brighton are deservedly in front as well. I think they've been pretty good tonight.
The form of Shane Duffy continues to deteriorate at quite a worrying rate, and there are Irish games, big Irish games, coming into focus. There was another bad mistake against St Mirren.
Yeah.
I mean, he's now just routinely popping up on your social media with the latest just really bad moment, which speaks of a player whose confidence is shot. John Egan is obviously waiting in the wings. Kieran Clarke is waiting in the wings to you know, play together. It was Egan and Duffy against Slovakia. Kieran Clarke was injured really up until about November, but since then, he's come back at Newcastle, pretty much played every minute of the season, signed a new two-year deal, seems to be in okay form. I mean, with Duffy, is it too much to imagine that just change of scene and playing for the Republic of Ireland and you know, whatever comfort comes with that gets him out of this little hole? Or does he almost look too fragile now to risk in a big international game?
I think it's difficult. You know, sometimes when you're not, things aren't going well at your club, usually it means you're not playing or you've had a couple of bad games, and going away to Ashington can be a change of scenery, a break, and kind of reboot yourself or whatnot. But I mean, he really has fallen off the edge of a cliff with his form for whatever reason. I mean, it must go deeper than just, it has to, you know, for a player of his caliber. You know, he was so good at Brighton for so long. I mean, even if he went up to Scotland and did okay, but I mean, he's been, you know, it falls so often that maybe it might be time for him to just get out of the team, to be honest with you, because nothing he seems to be able to do is coming off. And I know he did have a spell out of the team, but it's a difficult one to explain, and it's not good news for the Republic of Ireland. I can't say that it is, or he'll come in and he'll be a different player. I just think it's fallen so far now that his confidence will be absolutely shot to pieces. I mean, it'll be in tatters. And sometimes it might need a change of scenery from the club. You know, he might, you know, I know there was talk of him maybe going to Forest, to Chris Hughton, over the window. I'm not sure if that can still happen or what, but maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing for him.
Mm. So if he pitches up, obviously, for international duty, I suspect Stephen Kenny will want to talk to him. He's probably talking to him anyway, checking in with him to some extent or other, and trying to get a sense of where his head's at, you know? And,
yeah,
and you're hoping he comes in and says, look, it's a mess over there at Parkhead. It's just, everything's falling to pieces. I know it looks bad, but I feel good. Stick me in. You're kind of hoping that's the attitude he arrives back into camp with. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've got Egan there and you've got Clarke there, and they're in okay form. So yeah. I don't know how to what extent a manager bases the decision when he arrives into Ireland camp on his psychology, or to what extent he has to look at what he's seen over the last few weeks.
It'll be difficult because you know, if he does come in, I would fully expect Shane Duffy to give the answer you just said there.
Okay.
You know, I'm good to go, I'm ready. You know, Shane will do that. He's not the type of guy that will come in and say, listen, I'm in pieces, you know, I need to go home and cry myself to sleep. He would never say that. Shane will always show up, will always give his all, even if he's not doing well. He'll never shirk any of his responsibilities, and no matter how bad it gets, you have to give him that much. But you know, if you've got better players that are performing in the position, i.e. Egan and Clarke, who are playing regularly, you know, John Egan isn't exactly had a fantastic season for Sheffield United, although they have got a couple of good results recently and given themselves a shot at staying up. You know, you'd have to think that his head and Kieran Clarke's head are almost certainly in a better place than where Shane Duffy is. But, you know, you might have that chat, and then you might have to look at him in training as well.
I mean,
that's probably the only way you're going to get a full gauge of where he's at, and maybe he will come to life in Ireland training. I hope that's the case. But, you know, things have gone so bad from up there, and the amount of criticism that he's had has been relentless. As you said, it's just been never-ending, you know.
It has to have an effect. The most recent one was the St Mirren mistake the other day. And again, it pops up on your feed. It's so often the way we tend to see these mistakes, and you're thinking, God, that is just a ball Shane Duffy at Brighton feeling good about life deals with.
I watched that. Is that the one where he looked like he was trying to let it run across him, maybe? And he just, because there was a couple, I think it might be, was St Mirren wearing the yellow shirts? Is that right? Oh, no, it wasn't St Mirren. There was one before where a ball got headed back across, and he looked like he was trying to shield it back to his goalkeeper or something. I tried to put myself in his place and kind of go, what was he trying to do? Or where was his head at? What was he hoping to do? And I genuinely couldn't come up with an answer of at best I came up with maybe he was trying to let it run through to his goalkeeper, but he just seemed to misjudge the flight of the ball, let the forward get in front of him. Centre forward had a touch and just fizzed it into the back of the net. You know, extremely, extremely, as you said, unlike him. Yeah. But look, you know, time will tell.
Yeah. The other maybe less concerning one in that Seamus Coleman is there is Matt Doherty at Spurs. But like from Matt Doherty's point of view, it's so disappointing. Like this brilliant run at Wolves and secures him the move to Spurs, and you think, well, he's going to kick on here. And like initially, certainly in his first game or two, he admitted himself that it was an adjustment to go from right wing back to right back, and he was talking about, you know, starting positions being a bit too high and he'd had to, you know, kind of relearn the position a little bit. But here we are a long time into the season now, and against Liverpool the other evening he started left wing back and then moved to right back. I mean, the second half was just Jose Mourinho after every goal screaming Matt. You could, you know, you could lip read the Matt each time. And yeah, then obviously Aurier played against Brighton, so you'd have to say Doherty was in effect dropped. I mean, someone might say rested, but I think he was in effect dropped. But against Liverpool, a lot of Irish people might have tuned into that game. All the things, all the hallmarks of his Wolves days, you know, clarity of purpose, confidence, aggression, let me at it. None of those seem to be there at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's coming in for a little bit of criticism from Tottenham fans as well, which doesn't help. I mean, Tottenham is such a big football club and the expectation of it is so high. And I think Jose is obviously a very demanding manager. So if, you know, Jose is screaming your name every 2 minutes from the touchline, it can get on top of you. And you're right, there is an adjustment period. And maybe the Wolves system and the playing right wing back was brilliant for him. And he's come in and he's jumped around a few positions. I think he's probably knows he's not first choice right back. You know, I think Aurier is the first choice. And with Spurs' busy fixture list coming up, Matt was obviously supposed to come in and supplement. And sometimes that can affect the player's confidence when they know they're not first choice. And Aurier is the main man. So, look, he's not doing bad by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not, he's not as confident as what he was. I mean, his problems are nowhere near as bad as what the situation that Shane Duffy is in, you know, and he's playing pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And he's not playing poorly, you know. He's just not as good as what he was last year, but he's the type of player now where going into the Ireland camp, you know, the situation we're talking about might actually boost him up to come in and see some friendly faces and catch up with his family and his friends and whatnot, and maybe that'll help him.
Yeah, I guess it's still a bit away yet. Aaron Connolly deleted his social media after that miss against Spurs, which gives you an insight into the abuse he was getting. I'm not surprised anyone's getting abuse in the Premier League at this stage. I thought good on him to just delete it and just, I don't need that crap in my life. I might come back to it in a few years when I'm a bit more established and ready to deal with it. I think if it's affecting you like that, the best thing to do is to delete it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, unfortunately, it is a part and parcel of football, and Twitter is a medium that gives, you know, angry people an outlet or an avenue to get to you. And I know it's easier said than done not to read it. I've been there. It is difficult sometimes not to. As you get older, it's easier just to kind of, you know, turn the notifications off on your phone so you don't even know that anything's happening on Twitter. And you might log in a few weeks later and kind of have a giggle when the storm has passed. But
yeah,
good on him, man. I mean, if that's what he feels is best for him and his football, then good for him.
You must remember it coming into the dressing room increasingly. You were in that period before Twitter was a thing, and you were in that in the dressing room in the period after Twitter most certainly was a thing. Like, I mean, you must have seen players going from having no interest in that and maybe even regarding it as nonsense to possibly checking it in the dressing room after a match.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what it was. I mean, you know, I was still from an era where phones weren't allowed in the changing room, but now most players walk around with their wireless headphones and their phone in their hand, you know, and they're obviously on their phone, and you're talking like, you know, just before you're about to go for a warm-up, and you're thinking, is he changing the song, or is he actually like on his phone? And sometimes you would see players actually on social media when you'd walk by them, you know, in the change room. But you kind of have to accept that's part and parcel of the world. I had zero interest in it, and I did have a little kind of dabble in it, and I think straight away I realized that world wasn't for me, because, you know, what you find up happening is people will say something to you on Twitter, and then you'll try and reason with the person and give them a logical, actual explanation. But then once people realize that you're someone that responds, then people just say all sorts of weird things or off-the-wall things just to get a rise out of you, because sometimes people would write things and you kind of go, you can't possibly believe that. There's no way that's your opinion, you know. But then you try and reason with this person and then they just call you names and you're going, what was even the point? So yeah. I was just better off being away from it, to be honest. I'm still not a huge person for Twitter, to be honest. I all my notifications are turned off and I very, very rarely check it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And did you find some players were affected by it, some players getting upset looking at what people were saying about them after matches?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you'd get on the bus after a game and if a player had missed a chance or been at fault for a goal, you'd walk past them on the bus and they would be on Twitter and you'd just like grab their phone off them and say, put it away, man. Like, no good can come of this. You know, you're too emotional right now. You know, you're too angry, you know, whatever it may be. Just put it down for a couple of days, because usually if you go back in a few days and you read it, you know, and you've kind of dealt with it and processed it and moved on and you're thinking about the next game, you can read through those comments and they can just, you know, go off your back or whatnot. But obviously Aaron Connolly was very emotional, and when you hear people saying things they're saying, it just makes you more emotional. Mm. And then you start losing sleep, or you might lose your appetite, you know, and obviously then it can get very, very murky and very, very difficult. But I suppose 99% of the people on Twitter aren't malicious. Mm. You know, a lot of people will write things directly after a game, you know, within 15 minutes of a game, supporters, because they're emotional, they're angry, and they need somewhere to vent it as well. So you're better off just leaving it be. It's not for me, but, you know, he's learned the hard way, Aaron.
Liverpool are still 1-0 down, if you're just tuning in, against Brighton, 58 minutes on the clock, and I'm seeing West Ham have gone 2-0 up away to Aston Villa, which would be a serious result. Suchek, my God, Suchek again.
And
Jesse Lingard.
I saw that earlier. I was going to say it to you.
Everything Ole Gunnar Solskjaer touches turns to gold. He's rehabilitated Jesse Lingard and gifted him to David Moyes. Troy Parrott dropping down a division. Didn't quite work out for Millwall. Gary Rowett sung his praises, said he worked incredibly hard. I think he started 7 games, played in 14. He said he was doing work on his days off, work after training. Didn't happen for him. So he's gone back to Spurs and then just as quickly gone to Ipswich club, obviously, you know. When you drop down a division and then another division, I mean, my slight worry with those ones, that level will be more physical. The pitches will be dodgier and more bobbly. There might well be less craft in midfield behind him and less spotting of his runs. It's almost a different skill set. And I don't know, when it's a striker or a skillful midfielder, I hear League One and I think, oh, you can get swallowed up there almost.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a positive thing. It's a really, really good thing for Troy Parrott. And it's good that he's shown the appetite and the hunger that it didn't work out for Millwall. No problem. He's obviously probably requested to go back, or probably spoke with Gary Rowett and said, look, I need to play. I want to play. I'm hungry to play. Because he got to that stage at Tottenham where he kind of probably achieved all he could achieve with the under-23s. He was playing regularly, played in that UEFA Youth League and done really, really well. I remember that there was a big clamour for Jose to include him when he didn't have any strikers. He obviously wasn't ready. He needed to go out on loan and get experience. Went to Millwall and they obviously felt he wasn't ready. So now he's gone to Ipswich and he just needs to find a level where he can play, because the only way he's going to get better is if he plays. Sitting at the bench at Spurs, sitting at the bench at the Millwall is no good to him. He needs to find out how good a player he is, how good he can be, what he needs to improve on, because, you know, the cocooned environment that he would have been in at Tottenham, you can only learn so much there. You do need to go and kind of learn the rough and tumble of first team football, recovery, preparation, analysis, accepting mistakes, accepting when you've done well. That's what he needs to do. And Ipswich is a fabulous club, you know, footballing team. I know that Paul Lambert is there, a footballing manager. He's going to get minutes. I know there is a bit of an Irish contingent there as well. But I say good on him for showing the hunger and the appetite to cut one loan short and go straight on loan again, because he probably realised he'd gone as far as he can with Tottenham's under-23s.
So given that it's Lambert, given they're a footballing side, it's not the muckfest I've almost
I mean, there's still going to be games in the Premier League, you know, when you look at the likes of, you know, even a Crystal Palace or a Burnley, where it's going to be physical. So you need to learn all kind of facets of the game, you know, when you need to be physical, when you need to play, when you need to put the ball in the corner. That's what going out and playing football does, you know. When you're 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go and you're on a bad run of 3 defeats, you know, you need to learn that that's not a time for Troy Parrott to take the ball on his chest and take a risk. That's just put it in row Z. Whereas under 23 football, they'll always preach, play, play, play. Don't worry about the score. Don't worry about the state of the game. It's fine. Let's just improve and get better footballers. So they're the things that Troy Parrott will need to learn. And they're the things about being a professional footballer. that maybe a lot of people wouldn't see. But he'll get that education, I'm pretty sure, Ipswich. And ultimately, the cream will rise. If he's good enough, he will make it back up through the leagues. And maybe next season, he'll go out and run to a championship team and he'll get games and minutes of championship. And ultimately, if he does well enough, he'll get games and minutes in the Premier League.
Yeah. All makes sense. He's still so young. I mean, we've been talking him up for a long time. He's still 19 years old. You know, it's crazy. Man United 9, Southampton 0.
Yeah, incredible, incredible result, incredible game.
I didn't really see this because I was in here and we were doing the show live. I mean, we saw the sending off and obviously that played its part. So, why was it 9-0?
I have no idea. It was just... I mean, first of all, sending off was an absolute catastrophic attempt at a tackle, if you could call it that. I mean, it was, geez, if you could have given someone two red cards, it was that bad.
We felt sorry for him 2 minutes into his debut. I mean, this is horrific stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's his first Premier League start, and I mean, it was almost so bad that you kind of felt he didn't mean it. You know, there's no way that anybody would have, short of bringing the baseball bat on the pitch, could have kind of done more damage. So. You'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he was a bit eager and he just misjudged it, or, you know, he's just a little bit maybe a rabbit in the headlights and he just kind of lost a run of himself for a second. So, but imagine him sitting in the changing room on your phone, just watching the scores ticking in, and you're thinking, this is all my fault.
That's not one to go on Twitter for.
Absolutely not. You know, he's one of that should put his phone away and hopefully, you know, the club will rally around him and help him. And he learned a valuable lesson there as well. But, you know, it was just one of those funny games, wasn't it? Where, you know, the second red card, a couple of VAR decisions. It was an interesting game. And look, Man United were full value for maybe not a 9-0 win, but I think they were pretty good, to be honest with you. And you have to give them credit for that.
Still, though, it's been like a bit of a reality check. I mean, and you've never changed your opinion on where they are, even when things were looking very rosy. But since we last spoke, there was the nil-all at Anfield, there was the FA Cup win against Liverpool, and then Sheffield United defeat and the Arsenal draw, and then they recovered last night to win 9-0. I mean, like, the Sheffield United thing was obviously a very costly slip-up, and it can happen, I guess. In some ways, the Arsenal performance was more damning because they just never looked like they had a plan as to how they were going to break down this Arsenal side, and that was Arsenal missing three of their best players, and you know, it was it exposed in some ways more so than the Sheffield United slip up, which was still obviously a dreadful result, but it sort of exposed the weaknesses ultimately in this United team if they're going to try and win the league anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we could talk about Twitter and you dragged me into something there last week.
Sorry.
On Twitter, you know?
I turned out to be like Leeds United trying to drag you into, like, the abuse you got. It was a joke, and then it was like pylon.
That's fine. I do know that. I understand that the football fans would get upset, but, you know, I felt it was, you know, I never actually said that Manchester United will never win a game of football again. Of course they're going to win games of football, and they won a couple of games, and of course they'll obviously or most likely finish in the top four, and they're a decent side. You know, my point has always been, and I've been consistent with it, that Man United won't get back to the standard that they're at, that they expect, that was set by Alex Ferguson, that, you know, the Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho failed to get to, and they were judged off the Manchester United standard. You know, and he's been in the job 3 years now, and he, when I talk about Manchester United tactically, it's like he doesn't trust his team to play, or doesn't just trust Paul Pogba to play centrally in big games. He pushes him out onto the right-hand side or the left-hand side, and that's not where Paul Pogba wants to be. He always seems to favour Fred and McTominay for these big games.
Would you trust Pogba in a two? I'm not sure. Oof. I would either in a big game. Like, I sort of see where Solskjaer's coming from there.
Right, but I mean, you know, at some point you're going to have, this is why you end up with performances like you had against Arsenal, because you go very, very defensive, you know, and then when you play with two number sixes and two fullbacks that don't contribute to goals, although Aaron Wan-Bissaka did score last night, I'm aware of that, but I mean, you know, Luke Shaw hasn't contributed to a goal this season. I think I'm right in saying it's 0 goals and 0 assists, and I think that's Wan-Bissaka.
Did Shaw not have 2 assists last night?
Oh, well, before last night.
Before last night, okay.
I'm not including last night, obviously, but I'm just saying that, you know, so you're not like Liverpool, where a huge amount of your attacking play will come from your fullback. So when you play with two number sixes, you essentially only leave yourself with four players. That's Fernandes, Rashford, Martial, and another, really, of who plays. So when you play with essentially four attackers, that's why you fail to to really pin Arsenal in and make life difficult for them. You know, when you watch the way he sets his teams up for the likes of, you know, the Sheffield United away game, he will always go with Matic and Pogba, because Pogba is a bit of a free spirit, and I kind of am with you. If you do want to play Pogba centrally, you need a world-class number six next to him, you know, an N'Golo Kante, as he has at France. Yeah. And he haven't got that yet, so, you know, I do understand, and I see what Ole is doing, but then that's why he always loses big games, because he goes defensive. That's why they lost those three Champions League games.
In fairness to him, when McTominay went off with the stomach cramps, he did go attacking. He did move Pogba centrally alongside Fred, and he, you know, juggled things around and went more attacking, and still they couldn't break down Arsenal, which was
that's a
worry,
a fair,
you know.
That's a fair point, but I just think that maybe, you know, he gives an air of caution before big games. You know, he doesn't want to, like, you see the way they went out. Now, I know Southampton went down to 10 men very early, but you just saw that the, I won't say carefree abandon, but the intensity that they attacked with, and they ran forward with, and they pressed, and they really went after Southampton. I just wish they'd show that more often. Mm. No, listen, the argument is there, and I do listen to that, you know, he's building and they'll get there. But by the same token, it's been 3 years in the job now, and, you know, they can't seem to get over that hurdle. And I just think that a world-class manager would get them there an awful lot quicker, because, you know, how long do you wait? How long is this progress kind of line being rolled out? So look, maybe they'll get there one day, you know. I suppose I only realized the extent of the hatred of the United fans towards me when you dragged me
is
in
that
there.
Right?
Yeah,
because you've definitely softened tonight. I feel like Twitter has landed a blow here.
Not really. I mean, you know, it's not my, you know, it's never my intention to insult Manchester United. You know, I've nothing against Manchester United. I think they're a fantastic club. They're brilliant, and I do want them to be back on top. And I suppose, you know, it might get a bit much with me continuously, you know, slaughtering Manchester United. But it's an opinion, you know. And I suppose when people put a montage together, and it is every week, I get asked about them.
See, that's the problem. you get asked like every single week. You're like, is Solskjaer a good manager now? Like, of course, your opinion hasn't changed in a week.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, maybe he will go on and win the league. Maybe he will establish them as a dominant force in Europe. Oh, I don't see personally.
It will be so sweet if they do, just to have you on.
Absolutely, man. But you know, you're
not
worried. Yeah, absolutely not worried. it's not my intention to upset Manchester United fans. I understand they are very tribal and they're very protective of their club. But you know, I want the same things as them. You know, I want Manchester United back on top.
Hey, listen, we're talking opinions on football. It's just Twitter. so it's still Liverpool 0, Brighton 1. We have got to sign off. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. I guess maybe sometime after City-Liverpool might be good to get your thoughts on that game sometime next week.
Perfect, man. No problem.
All right, man. Take care. Cheers. Damien Delaney. Always great to have him on. Still, as I said, Brighton 1, Liverpool 0.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.